Hi, everyone. I'm FreePod host Alan Wenzel. Today, my guest on the extended interview for FreePod is Jim Yeager, who is director of the Mass Communications Department at Highland Community College right here in Freeport, Illinois. Before we begin, Jim, I'd like to, first of all, thank you for taking time from a busy schedule to talk with us today.
For sure. Happy to be here.
I'd like to also make a special note to our FreePod listeners that it's Jim's department that is responsible for producing all of our FreePod podcasts and interviews. They do a great job. And Jim, I want to thank you personally and to all of your folks in the Mass Communications Department for helping us out. You guys do a great job.
Well, thank you for saying that. We appreciate it.
The reason I've asked Jim to talk to us today is to help us understand a little bit more about the topic of disinformation and misinformation. So, Jim, I'm going to just start. As many of our listeners know, in the past several years, really, now, we've been inundated with phrases like misinformation, disinformation, fake news, alternative facts, deep fake videos. What are we talking about here, Jim? Can you define what all of this is really about? What are we talking about?
Sure. Well, from a scholarly perspective, we differentiate disinformation from misinformation by intent, right? So misinformation is any information that's just not true, right? So saying 1 + 2 = 7 is misinformation. Now, if you honestly believe that 1 + 2 = 7 and you repeat that, that's just simple misinformation. That's you don't know better. But if you know that 1 + 2 = 7 and you continue to spread that information, that's what we call disinformation. So disinformation is when you're deliberately spreading misleading or false information in the pursuit of some objective. It's what we usually call propaganda, but we now have called disinformation as well, just because it kind of fits nicely into the rhyme scheme of misinformation and disinformation.
That's a good way to start to help us understand a little bit about the difference between those two terms. Mm-hmm. Now, to the casual listener, it might have, you know, someone might say, boy, we've had that. That's been around a long time.
Sure,
misinformation,
sure.
Disinformation. And I'm sure that's true.
Absolutely.
Have you seen from your, and by the way, I'll mention to our listeners that Jim's expertise comes from this because he teaches this subject in his intro to media studies course and in his critical thinking class. So, Jim, kind of from an expert academic viewpoint, have we seen an increase in either misinformation or disinformation in the last several years?
Well, it's hard to measure scientifically, right? There's
sure.
a lot of anecdotal, and the best research that we have usually is kind of surveying and doing analysis around elections, right? Because that's where most misinformation and disinformation comes. And based on the last election cycle, we found that 73% of voters were exposed to misinformation or disinformation on a regular basis. Now, whether that's higher or lower than in, you know, 1968, we don't know. We weren't measuring things at that time. But it's realistic, it's probable to say that with the rise of social media, with what we call the democratization of media, where everybody and their mother can post whatever they want now, it's more likely that people are going to be exposed to misinformation and disinformation.
Do we know from that information, from those studies, 73% of voters have been exposed to that? Do we know the extent to which that disinformation has affected a voter's decision? Is there any way to track that? Probably not.
Exactly. It's almost impossible to say. And that's where we get into such a sticky area with this discussion is that while I think most people would agree that we want facts, right? We want to base decisions on factual information. The effect that disinformation or misinformation has on a person is a very qualitative descriptor, not a quantitative. It's hard to put a number on. It's hard to define what exactly changed your mind. I mean, listeners can ask themselves, you know, can you think of what was the one piece of information that made them believe X? Probably not.
Yeah, right.
It's an amalgamation of a bunch of different things. So we know that disinformation and misinformation plays a role because it certainly has persuasive power. But how much of a role it has, that's something that's really hard to measure.
I remember years and years ago, Jim, even before your tenure here at Highland, I co-taught a class with a history teacher on political propaganda during election cycles. Mm-hmm. And we found from the research that we were able to find with negative ads, three things. People hated negative ads, but two, they remembered them. Mm-hmm. And three, it did in some ways affect how they voted in the ballot box. Now, how they determine it, I'm not sure, but it led me to believe that if you're inundated with this stuff enough, it's going to have some effect. Could I say the same thing about disinformation?
Absolutely. It's the more you hear it, the more likely you are to believe it. And the more you're exposed to it, the more likely you are to embrace it. And you're dead on right with that comparison to negative ads. It falls into a cognitive bias we call confirmation bias. When we hear information that reinforces what we already believe, we tend to believe it without a lot of skepticism. We tend to not challenge it a whole lot. And so when we're encountering information that tells us you were right all along, whether it's true or not, we're more likely to just accept it at face value. And so, yeah, it feeds into that same idea, that basic kind of human drive that we have. Fear feeds into a basic human element, so it's very persuasive. Well, telling people what they want to hear also feeds into a basic human drive, and so it's very compelling and very effective.
Stepping for a second outside of the election topic, the election cycle, the election parameters here for a minute, do we have disinformation happening in other areas of our society, advertising or product? Those kinds of things also. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I mean, and if anybody who uses social media, and whether that be
social
media is the home of misinformation and disinformation. It really thrives. If you're on social media, you will very frequently see what we call viral posts about a product, right? This product made this happen, right? This product did this to me. And people will use that as gospel truth. And people will cite that in their conversations with others. Well, no, I saw this woman on Facebook who said that this product made her lose all of her hair.
That's one person saying that, making up.
Absolutely.
Likely.
And one person who can say whatever they want with no vetting, with no recourse, with no consequence for it whatsoever. So, yeah, you see people with product disinformation quite frequently on social media. You see people with cultural disinformation quite often. For those who might be aware, especially younger listeners, when I say the word Diddy, they're probably immediately familiar with what's going on with Sean Combs. And there's a multitude of what are ultimately conspiracy theories going on around the Sean Combs situation and how many other celebrities are involved. And those kind of things spread like wildfire on social media. And that disinformation and misinformation gets spread by people who both, again, know it's false, but want to push a narrative, as well as by people who just don't know better and are saying, oh, did you hear about this? That's how a lot of misinformation begins, is did you know? Well, no, I didn't know that because it wasn't true.
Now, you're getting into an area I'd like to talk just a little bit about. And from your perspective, what are the inherent dangers here, Jim, of this kind of spreading of conspiracy theories, disinformation? And you hint at it when you talk about, the kinds of bad things that happen when we start to believe things that aren't true. Mm-hmm. But what do you see here from a person who teaches about media and talks to students about how to deal with this? What are the ultimate harms and the results that come from this kind of disinformation?
Well, on a very basic, fundamental level, it makes it harder to have conversations with each other. You know, I point out to my students all the time, I'm old enough to remember the world before the internet. I'm old enough to remember where when you wanted to get news or you wanted to get information about the world, you only had a handful of sources.
Right.
We had a couple television stations we could tune into. We had a newspaper in town. We had radio stations we could listen to. Well, now
some news weeklies, Time Magazine,
exactly,
Newsweek.
Magazines, things like that. Today, you ask students, especially college students, where they primarily get their information, and it's social media. And as a result, when I remember in my younger days, where we were all starting from the same basic facts, we all started discussion, whether we disagreed or agreed on a subject, we all started from the same basic facts that we agreed upon and disagreed upon what those facts meant, what we would do with them, things like that. Now we're disagreeing on whether or not 1 + 2 really equals 3 or not. And how do you have a conversation with your neighbor when one of you thinks that, you know, you're going to fall off the edge of the planet any minute, and the other thinks that the world is about to end in 13 seconds? So on the one level, it makes really difficult to have basic conversations. At a much greater level, it leads to violence. And we've seen incident after incident after incident where misinformation and disinformation that spreads through social media, especially and on internet websites, can lead to literal acts of violence. The example I like to use quite often is the Pizzagate controversy, where a man walked into the pizza parlor in Washington, D.C., demanding to know where the children were being held. He had read this rumor online that children were being trafficked through the basement of Comet Ping Pong, a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C., and he walks into the building with a weapon and fires off rounds and threatens to kill people if they don't release these children. Well, there were no children. And there was not even a basement for the children to be in to begin with. Misinformation and disinformation can literally be deadly in some instances. And so on the one hand, for many of us, it's just an annoyance, right? We all have that friend who believes something that you know is just simply untrue, but they have so many different sources, quote unquote, to back them up. On a deeper level, it can lead to real physical harm for people.
Is this in some ways a generational thing? I don't spend time on social media. I'm not camped there. I don't even know how to use most of it. Mm-hmm. And so I get my news from different places, probably old traditional places I did, you know, when I was a kid or younger, 40, 50 years ago. Younger people today are more social media savvy. They collect their information that way, get their news that way. Are we seeing, you know, a difference maybe in how the generations are perceiving the world now because of the different places from which they get their my information? Yeah, I get information from places that probably has some misinformation from time to time, but they're not purposely trying to mislead me. Mm-hmm. Others are getting information from places that are purposely trying to mislead you. Mm-hmm. Is it a generational factor in this, Jim?
To a degree. I think it's more of a critical thinking factor.
Okay. Right? All right.
I have a hard time pinpointing it down to a generational thing because I know older people who have just as much of a problem with determining these type of things as anybody else. But I think what it is that we've gotten away from emphasizing critical thinking and emphasizing research, real research, not I Googled it, but actually looking into the subject and using those filters that we all have of, you know, if you're telling me something and it just doesn't pass the sniff test, then maybe I should take a second look at it, whether I agree with it or not. I should kind of be more skeptical and be more evaluating of that information. So again, I wouldn't minimize it to a generational thing so much as, you know, some people emphasize critical thinking and skepticism about an information and others are much more willing to accept.
The long and the short of it is the more that we get our basic news and information from places other than objective news sources, like a social media source, the more likely it is we're going to be exposed to this disinformation.
Correct. Yes, that is my summation, right? And even traditional media, even, you know, the old school media will still fall victim to disinformation from time to time. We'll still fall victim to misinformation from time to time. The difference there is accountability. If Fred posts something on Facebook that proves to be completely and totally false, Fred doesn't have to go on air the next day and answer for it. Right. Fred can leave that up for the rest of eternity and people will always be able to access it.
Right.
If a traditional media source posts something that ends up being untrue, they make an apology for it. They recognize it. They acknowledge it. And so, look, we're all human. Even media sources are human beings and they make mistakes. But it's far less common, especially when you consider how much vetting that information has to go through. You know, again, when Uncle Fred wants to post something on Facebook, he doesn't have to have other people read it and say, oh, that's right. I can verify this here or check the grammar.
He just writes it up and puts it on
there. Just write it up and hit send, you know, hit post. It's out for the world. Whereas in traditional media, you go through multiple levels of verification, multiple levels of people of different eyes. It's harder for something to slip through because you have multiple levels of people double checking things for you. Multiple levels of people to go, wait, that doesn't sound right.
So that leads to two questions. How can we better detect this kind of disinformation, and what can we do about that? You've already mentioned some things about checking for ourselves and diving into stuff. It doesn't pass the sniff test, but what are some red flags that maybe we should look out for, Jim, when we're trying to sort out this world of disinformation from factual true information?
Well, the first thing I tell my students is if a source claims that they're the only ones that have the information, be very, very, very skeptical of that source. Again, we used to all agree on the facts and disagree on the analysis of those facts. Well, if one source claims that the unemployment rate is 38% and every other source on the planet says the unemployment rate is 3%, you have to use a little bit of Occam's razor there. What's more likely, that 38 of these journals were misled or that the one was misled. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of Occam's razor can go a long way with determining disinformation and misinformation. Another is
I kind of call that the preponderance of the evidence.
Exactly.
Seems to be.
Exactly. It seems 3%, to be, right. You know, can I say with absolute 100% certainty? I don't know, but much more likely than not, right? That it's going to go one way than the other. Mm-hmm. Another tip that I give to people is to consider the source, right? Think about where the information is coming from. It's very easy for you to believe something because it comes from a friend of yours, but does that friend of yours have the context the information is supposed to be in? Is that friend of yours seeing the bigger picture here, or are they just relaying something they heard themselves? Were they there, or are they, did their friend's cousin's neighbor's girlfriend's sister see it and they're relaying the information? How many levels are there between what you're hearing and where it originated can be another good indication of disinformation and misinformation.
So what do we do about all of this stuff as a private individual, as a member of society, as a potential voter?
How do we,
what techniques can we use to sort through some of this stuff and better disassemble, I guess, the bad from the good?
Well, the first thing I tell people is stop sharing. Right. Stop sharing. If you see something on social media that is dubious or is, again, doesn't pass the sniff test, don't share it. Don't shoot first and ask questions later. Check the information, verify things, then share. Recognize the difference between analysis and factual reporting. You know, whether you look at a website that is far left leaning or far right leaning, they tend to share the same piece of data, but then go on to interpolate that data into very different directions.
Lots of viewpoints on what that data means.
Exactly. Separate out what they're reporting from what they're analyzing. And before you share something, ask yourself, are you sharing facts or are you sharing opinion? Are you sharing analysis? And can you recognize the difference between the two? So the first thing I tell people is stop sharing until you're sure. Because the worst thing you can do is just allow this to continue to spread. And then that affects more people and more people and more people. Another thing that we can do to really kind of help defend ourselves is to just be more skeptical in general. When you hear information, ask yourself, is this something that benefits the person that's sharing the information with me? Is this information that feeds into a bias or a belief that I already have? Is this information that I naturally want to accept? Be more skeptical about things that we even agree with. It's really easy to be skeptical of things we disagree with, but ask yourself, are you easily accepting the things that you do agree with? Are you accidentally sharing misinformation just because you're preaching to the choir, just because it feels good for your side?
Mm-hmm. I'll share a quick example. It's going to lead to a technique that I've used over the years, Jim, when I've come across information. A friend of mine recently shared the story that at a restaurant, one of his waitresses commented that, hey, there's some trouble down in I'll make up the town here. Okay, there's trouble down in Peoria. There's some riots and some demonstrations on the street because someone was shot last night. And boy, it's a mess down there. My friend said, well, I have a daughter that lives in Peoria. I'm going to call her up and find out what's going on. Call her up. And she said, there's nothing going on here. I don't know what she's talking about. She went on to the news websites there for the local news in Peoria, the TV stations, checked the police blot. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing going on. So here again, a friend of a friend telling a waitress that, you know, I like to go right away. I like to call up and say, I'm going to check that out. Mm-hmm. I want to find out if that's true.
Because it is.
And that's something that some of us can do. I'm going to try to track down, go right to the source. Yep. I'm going to call the police department, find out if there's anything going on downtown.
Yep. Go right to the source, because usually those exaggerated examples, those phenomenal kind of fantastical examples, they're not verified by legitimate news sources. And I realize there's conspiracy theorists who go, that's the point, right? They don't want you to know the truth. But again, apply Occam's razor here. What's more likely, that everyone in town is being duped, or that your cousin's friend's sister's cousin's wife is the one who really figured it out?
Right.
What's more likely in that situation?
My daughter looks out her window in downtown Peoria and says, there's nobody out here on the streets.
The town isn't on fire.
Isn't on fire. I'm going to believe my daughter.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so you try to get to the source and try to get there as quickly and as closely as you can. That's going to help a lot.
Very much so. Yeah.
Jim, interesting, fascinating discussion. We could talk for a couple hours on this. And your classes, I'm sure you have fun
We try.
Are there any places that books or anything else you might want to recommend us to read if we want to know more about this subject?
Sure.
I mean, as an academic person, I've got to ask you that, Jim.
Read from time to time. Well, there's a great book here at Highland. We just used this as our One Book, One Highland last year called What the Fact. What the Fact. And it is a phenomenal, really easy to read book. Admittedly, I'm a bit of a nerd, so I read it pretty quickly. But I think even for non-nerds, you can go through it pretty quickly. It's written.
It's a page turner. It's hard to put down once you start
It's written for the generalized audience.
With a ton of examples that are really cool.
Very good examples. Mm-hmm. And it's a phenomenal look at the modern day. It's really up to date and really current on how misinformation and disinformation spreads, what effects it has on society, things like that. So I can't recommend it highly enough. I encourage all my students to read it, and I would encourage any listeners to read it too.
And if anyone wants to take your class, Jim, down the road to learn more about this subject, there's certainly you'd welcome them.
We got plenty. We always have room.
We always have an open seat for someone who's interested in this topic.
Absolutely.
I want to thank you so much for your time spent today. We may come back at you on this topic somewhere down the road as needed, and we sure are grateful for all that you've done for us and for FreePod in helping us produce our session. So, Jim, thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
I'll try. Thanks, Al.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Besides these extended interviews, which are available every Tuesday at noon on your favorite streaming platform, freepod.org or WNIJ out of DeKalb, I invite you to tune into our regular weekly newscast for the local news you've been missing, which drops every Thursday at noon. As always, we'd like to remind you that FreePod couldn't come to you without the help of many local supporters. We're especially appreciative for the Mass Communications Department at Highland Community College for producing this podcast, as well as our many liaisons and reporters for the time they volunteer to bring the news to you. Thank you, Highland and Team FreePod. Once again, I'm FreePod host Alan Wenzel. Until next time, thanks for listening and have a good week.